Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and tonight we look at what it takes to rise to the top of your profession. So tell me, have you ever seen a tree grow to half its length? Have you ever seen a shark chase its prey at half the speed it can swim? Or a flower blossom to half its natural size? No, in fact, you probably haven't and you never will, because when a shark swims after its prey, it swims as fast as it can. And when a tree grows, it grows as high as it can, and it drives its roots into the ground as deep and as hard as it can. The fact is, human beings are the only species on the planet that routinely live to a fraction of their potential. Human beings are the only species on the planet that will actually think themselves into defeat. Human beings are the only species on the planet that can actually think themselves to death. This is a fact. When you look at the average time a heart attack takes place in the United States of America, it takes place right around 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, when these individuals are thinking about work, about jobs they hate, about things that are causing them a huge amount of stress, and that is being generated in their mind. They're thinking themselves to death. So what's my point? The point is that the real fight for your career is not in the market. It's not in the office. The real fight for your career is not against your competitors. This is not a battle of economics or IQs. Intelligence is not going to play a major factor in the success of your career. The battleground for your career is in your mind. The real fight takes place inside your head. The fact is, the biggest enemy you will ever face is yourself. You are your own nemesis, because your mind will discourage you. Your mind will fill you full of anxiety. Your mind will fill you full of fear. Your mind will tell you that you can't do it. All of this is imagined. All of this is made in your mind. The enemy is your mind. As soon as you realize this, you'll be ready for the real fight to begin. And that fight is between you and you. The champions who make it to the top take this fight on and win it every day, because this battle is a battle of wills. It's a battle of the mind. To win this game, you have to drive doubt out of your mind, but don't take it from me. The best idea, if you want to be successful, is ask people who've already made it to the top, people who've summited that mountain. The biggest mistake I see people make is they ask their friends for advice, and their friends haven't made it to the top. Their friends don't have any clue about how to be successful. Why would you ask them for success? And this show gives you an opportunity, because it's interactive, for you to ask our guests any question about your career. You can SMS us at 4001. Or use our mobile app, which you can get on our website at DubaiEye1038.com, and interact with any of our presenters on any of our shows. But tonight, we're going to ask a man who has built many businesses, not just one, not just two, I mean many businesses. He is one of the pillars of the business community here in Dubai. His name is Ziad Makazoumi, Group CEO of Faki IVF, a UAE-based specialist fertility medical group, and the leader, I believe, one of the leaders in this region. He was previously the CFO of ArabTech Holding, and a man who has amassed a huge amount of accolades. He will really be giving you his personal lessons learned on the road to the top. He's going to have the courage to talk about some of his biggest failures and some of his biggest successes. There'll be a lot to take away from there. And if that isn't enough, we're also going to hear from Hazel Jackson, a woman who came to this country with $700 in her pocket. Okay, she didn't know anybody. She didn't have any friends here. She didn't have any family here. She came here with $700 in her pocket. Today, she runs the Biz Group, a multi-million dollar training and development company that she built from scratch. And, you know, I'm not going to stop there. We're going to keep going. And after that, we have a panel of three of the top female CEOs in the region talking about how they built their businesses up from scratch and what it's like to drive a business as a woman in the Middle East. I think this is going to be one interesting show full of tidbits that you can use to drive your own career to the next level. But before we start, let's get a little bit more on Ziad's background and what he has done, if we can get this to play, but we can't. So let's forget about that then. So Ziad Makazumi, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It is quite a pleasure to have you here. I know that you started Faki IVF in 2013, but before that you were the CFO of Arabtech Holding, which was the largest listed construction company in the GCC. And before that, you've run several other businesses. One of the most notable is Future Pipe, and so many others. I think you've worked for the consultancy Booz Allen, and you have won Revolutionary CFO of the Year and for Excellence in Finance in 2010 and 2011 as the most admired CFO in the Middle East. And Wall Street Journal listed you in 2000 among the top 20 influential non-royal decision makers in the UAE. So one level below royalty. So I'm basically just taking a few lines. So there's quite a bit more there. So it's quite a successful career you've had today.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky to be introduced to all these opportunities. I mean, my interest in change and in business and strategy was not driven by getting these accolades or awards or whatever. But it's just that I'm a person who loves to study things and learn from things. And I've been blessed to be able to analyze very quickly and quantify value one way or another. I mean, my hobby was mathematics and physics when I was young. The reason I did electronics because I was a lazy academic and I thought I can get a degree that would please my parents instead of saying you're going to become a teacher or a professor or whatever. I mean, I did grow up in Lebanon from a very conservative family. My father worked for the government, so we were probably middle class. And their motive for survival was to provide the best for the children. We were five of us, and we all went to the same school. Some of us made it probably better than others or succeeded one way or another. And I'm a person that all my life encourage opportunities to come my way, and if I find them, I take them, but I must like them. At some stage, I was like a corporate hippie, looking for what makes sense to me and go on. So I started as an engineer, graduated, worked as a contractor in Saudi Arabia.
So this is by no means a sexy start. I mean, you start your career in kind of dusty, sandy, hot construction fields in Saudi Arabia. At that point, did you have any doubt about where your career was going? Was there a vision at that point that, well, hey, I'm going to make it?
I definitely decided I don't want to be an engineer in that sense, basically, although I was scheduled to go back and do my PhD in engineering. And this is where it so happened again that I was passing by the Manchester Business School, and I thought this is a cool place, and I wanted to know more about it. I definitely enjoyed the people that were there and the food, and I decided to switch from engineering, a PhD in engineering, to do a master's in finance. And the reason finance, because, again, I was comfortable with numbers, and I thought a master's in finance was good.
Do you think people today, if they should do an MBA or they should do a master's in finance, do you think that's kind of, when you look back at it, the stepping stone?
Well, I definitely believe any education and further qualification is important because the world is becoming more and more demanding in skills and requirements and becoming so mixed. So, you know, language is definitely an advantage. As a CEO, if you do not understand finance, then there's no way you can survive, in my view. As CFOs, you can't just be a number cruncher and a custodian of history and repeating what happened in the past, but you should be part of the planning process. So roles are changing, and the more qualifications and skills that you have and experience is very important. But very important point, I mean, Somebody asked me, to you, what is wisdom? And I thought wisdom, initially maybe that, you know, you're old and gray with a big beard and sitting on a throne somewhere. No, wisdom is knowing where to get the answers, and I think. And we are in an age now where information is available. And if you have some sense and some guidance, this is where the role probably of mentoring and coaching becomes important, then you can probably learn very quickly. I mean, I was today on a visit in one of the big medical centers here and in Dubai, and it is amazing the training centers that they have for the medical school, for example, to the point that they believe now, the way technology is moving, that probably you can become a very good doctor with a lot of experience in 3 years and not in seven. You know, that shows you how knowledge is moving and is available.
And I think it's I heard that once you start medical school, by the time you finish, 50% of everything you were taught is obsolete.
Absolutely. I mean, when I did my electronics degree, 6 months in the year, probably I knew that when I graduate, if I don't stay on top of the game, my knowledge would be obsolete. I mean, I remember my professor, he was designing the circuit board that had 250 processors, and that was quite a revolution in my days. We're talking 1978, really, when I graduated in engineering school. But now you can have probably about 500,000 on a chip the size of a fingernail, basically. This is how things are moving, you know, faster and better.
So when we look at how you built your career, you get the engineering degree, you go back and get your master's in finance, so you have kind of the way to create structure, and then you have the way to understand numbers, and then you go into Booz Allen where you learn how to communicate, how to do strategy, and you get exposure to business. It seems like a perfect recipe or the perfect soup for success. Was this planned, and is this type of formula what you would suggest for someone who wants to be successful in business?
Well, it definitely was not planned. I mean, not consciously anyway, maybe subconsciously it was. But, I mean, I knew that my knowledge in one area was not enough and my expertise in one area was not enough. And I knew the world is becoming more demanding on skills and so on. And in some ways, I was influenced by what I thought was easy for me to do, to be quite honest, because I didn't have the mentoring and coaching. So automatically, finance and numbers was easy to do. Planning and strategy is a bit of engineering, so it was easy to do. Project management, strategy, planning, implementation tactics, they're all like building a house or designing a circuit board or whatever. So it all fell into place, and I don't know if it fell into place because I was very smart at planning. The answer is no. But I could see potential when it comes for my way. And I always say, this is interesting. This will add value to me, so I will do it. So I learned how to play the guitar. I worked on increasing my knowledge of languages. I worked in different countries and want to understand cultures. I wanted to communicate better and so on.
This is the story of Ziad Makazoumi, Group CEO of Faki IVF, one of the UAE-based specialist fertility medical groups and a leader in the GCC in male and female infertility. Ziad was formerly the CFO of Arabtech Holding and also one of the founders and key drivers of FuturePipe. We're going to hear more of his lessons learned on the road to the top in just a minute, so stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to the story of Ziad Makazoumi. For those of you just joining us, Ziad started life as an engineer. Well, that wasn't the exact start of his life, but that was the beginning of his academic career. And after that, he went into construction in Saudi Arabia. After a taste of the desert sands in Saudi, he decided to come back to London and get his MBA and then joined the ranks of the strategy consultants at Booz Allen. This was quite an interesting mix of skill sets, the engineering, finance, and the strategy consulting, which then led him into the birth of FuturePipe, a huge company, which just skyrocketed in value, a company actually that before he purchased it was, I think, almost on the verge of bankruptcy, and he turned it around, as he's done with many businesses. Ziad, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure here to have you here. Now, on one hand, you know, we can see that you know, you had worked very hard, obviously, throughout your career. On the same time, you know, were you lucky? You know, where does luck and hard work? How do these two interact with each other in a success story?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you define luck. I mean, if an opportunity comes your way, is that luck or is it planned, or there is some other force somewhere in the universe that plans it? Is it your parents always praying for you, or your friends wishing you well? I mean, I personally believe goodwill is there. I don't know how to define it. But I think hard work is important. Planning is very important, because that reduces the amount of hard work needs to be done. And spotting opportunities. I mean, you have to be open-minded about things. But I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't go through the whole cycle of working in Saudi, working as an engineer, living in a desert, finding out exactly what I want. And probably it would have been probably faster and more successful if I had a mentor or a coach to tell me, consider this and consider that. I grew up in Lebanon. We didn't have a proper mentoring program. We had very good schools. We had limited universities. But then technically we had a civil war in Lebanon in 75, which forced me to leave Lebanon and go and fend for myself. And I think this is where I learned the importance of finding out more and planning, because we were on a limited budget. We didn't have any communication with the homeland, more or less. We didn't know if we can make money or not, so we had to really economize and learn how to do things, knowing that maybe a year before that, I had my own car, my own motorbike. I didn't even have to make my bed. My mother would just have all my meals ready, or my grandmother, or whatever it is. All I had to worry about is school, university, and my social life. So I think, was that luck that the war has started and I was forced to learn more? I don't know. It's opportunities, and it's all in the mind. I mean, people should learn how to do things, and sometimes you are forced to, unpleasantly.
One of the things that I really find in your story is that you see setbacks or failures as the seed of your success. That these setbacks, that here's the war, this is the birth of the next chapter of my success. Mm. Whereas so many other people would have made excuses as to why they're just never going to sprout or thrust beyond this stone wall.
I mean, I agree. I mean, these things happen, in my view, for a reason. I mean, I'm not being religious or philosophical about this, but things happen and you see an opportunity. And you have two kinds of people. He would say, well, this is my luck, therefore I do nothing about it and get stuck. And I have lots of friends who are stuck back in Lebanon one way or another, and they just have some miserable lives, and they are getting old, and they the system will not support them. And they would say, what the hell have I done with my life in the last 40 years? Whereas others have become extremely successful. Some of them are brilliant researchers in medicine in the U.S. or amazing people who have done other things, or became diplomats or politicians and so on. And these are the ones that had the passion to do it, or had the opportunity to jump in and do it. And I think occasionally you're forced with situations where it forces you to make a decision, and this is where your leader instinct comes in, and you lead, or you do something that no one else has done, and you move forward on this. In my case, I mean, fortunately or not, unfortunately, it is a fact that certain environmental issues that, or my cultural issues or situations, certain situations, forced me to make a different decision altogether. Probably I would not have made if these situations did not arise. So the war in Lebanon forced me to leave Lebanon. The disagreement with my brother and the family business forced me to leave the family business. Deciding to basically do an MBA and not an engineering because, I mean, it might sound a silly reason, but I mean, I hated the smell of the engineering lab, for example. So it is certain situations that will always give you signs that it's about time you change and do something else.
But you also mentioned earlier career, you were more likely to, you know, even though you're unhappy, you know, you tried to stick it out or tried to push it out. Now, I think as you get a bit wiser, you feel you would have pulled the trigger more quickly. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I mean, I started my career with booze. I had a disagreement on how the business should be run in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East in general. So my reaction was to be angry and react in a way probably was not constructive. But it turned out to be better because I went into the family business with my brother and some other partners, and we did acquire the group, which was then Amiantit, and we turned it into a very successful story. But again,
this is the story of Future Pie.
This
for
is the which became Future
Can
Pie.
Can you give us a few metrics on, or are we not really desire to talk about it too much?
Well, I mean, it's a family business. Like any family business, you have disagreements, but which makes it worse because it is the family. I was not happy in the last few years of working together. I mean, we were together for about 16 years. The last few years were not the most pleasant years in my life. I was under a lot of stress. We had disagreements on many issues. We had different views of what we expect out of our life or our families and so on. And I should have made the decision to leave probably many years before because I wasn't happy with that. But again, because of my background and my belief in the family issues and family's unity and so on, I delayed the decision and it almost affected my life. I mean, I almost had heart problems and stress and all sorts of things. I walked away. It was very difficult to walk away because you're walking away from a lot of financial comfort. But to me, being happier and doing what I really believe in and not spend my time trying to please others was more important for me. And it took me a while to get there. I mean, for about 3-4 years, it was financially extremely demanding on me.
But it's also a lot of courage. I mean, don't you think a lot of people, they just don't have the courage to take that jump, one, and two, they don't have the self-belief that if they work hard that they will make a success of their dream.
Absolutely. I mean, and it doesn't have to be a dream. It's just a better life. I mean, it doesn't have to be so elaborate that it's a dream that I'm going to rule the world and so on, although you can if you want to. The question is, you should make a decision. If something is not working and you've tried everything possible, you should do something different. And something different could be that you ask someone for help, not someone who is going to agree with your decision. You should be, you know, courageous and strong enough to go to somebody who will basically bear you there, strip you naked, and say, this is the situation, take it or not. So you can't live your life accusing others of not giving you the right advice or not supporting your decision. You know, life is very difficult. The world is growing. It's more demanding, and you have to make decisions and stick to them. And if I believe if you plan them and do make the decision, you can always find a way of making it work. But if you keep on, you know, being on the edge, I don't want to jump, I don't want to go in the water, I don't want to do this, and then things will not happen and life will pass you and you find out that you're stuck, you're miserable, you're unhappy, your family life is not correct. Probably your children don't want to talk to you because you're such in a bad mood all the time. And I think this is not worth it. And I think people should make a decision, even if it's the wrong decision, provided you admit that you made a mistake and do something else, it'll work. When you're driving somewhere and all of a sudden a tree just falls on the road, do you wait for it to be moved or you try to find another way of going around it? And a lot of people, when they find obstacles in their life, they keep on banging their head on that brick wall in front of them instead of finding a way around it, because either their ego will not allow them to admit that there's something wrong or there's a mistake, or they're comfortable in their discomfort because it's something they know and can predict, and they wake up in the morning and complain and whine about it, that, you know, the world is a bad place. We know, move on, do something about it.
Comfortable in your discomfort. I like that. But what I also find very interesting from a psychological perspective is that you're sitting here and you're looking out on the precipice of this dream, and you just need to take that those first few steps to cross into reality and start working on it. But you're scared that you're going to fail, or you're scared that whatever's going to happen. And that's all imagined. And on the other hand, the other person who looks out on the precipice of their dream and takes those first few steps and visualizes that success and says, oh, I can't wait to do this. You know, I'm going to knock it out of the park. This is going to be a huge success. That is also imagined. So both states are completely fantasy, completely made up. And so in a sense, you know, your imagination becomes your weapon of choice as you craft your reality and take your destiny.
Absolutely. And I mean, we were talking about before the program about my involvement with the business school in England and how we started what we called the entrepreneurship. It used to be the Entrepreneurship Summer Project, and then it became the Entrepreneurship School in London Business School. And when we sat down and talked about it, I was asked, what value would you add to the business school that the professors don't provide? And I said, well, first of all, we've done it, we've made it. Professors are on a low income and they can write books, which at some stage anybody else can write them because technology is moving and knowledge is available. But really what we're going to teach those students is attitude. Attitude to be courageous enough to try something that if it'll work, it'll be great. If it doesn't work, it doesn't make any difference because you're still stuck where you are. So where is the loss of trying something different and getting your head out of that little window on the world and seeing that there's a rest of the world that you can pick on?
Yeah, I think there's a great point. I love one of the CEOs that we're said, you know, there's only one way out of this game. You're going to die. You have to die at some point to get out of here. So, that, you know, if that's the final end game for everybody, what's there to be scared of? But this is the story of Ziad Makazumi. You know, he has had a huge amount of success building company after company, many of them the largest in the Middle East for what they do. And I do mean that in plural. And he will be sharing more of his secrets to success. And we'll be talking about his biggest challenge, his biggest failures that he will be sharing with us in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to be successful in your profession. And here to lead that discussion with us is Ziad Makazumi, a man who started his life as an engineer, did some construction in Saudi Arabia, went back, did his MBA in the United Kingdom, and then joined Booz Allen, got a few years or more than a few years of strategy consulting under his belt, and I think then with his brother, they started Future Pipe, which skyrocketed up to, I think, one of the biggest, if not the biggest player in their segment in the GCC. And then after that, he joined ArabTech, which was the largest publicly listed construction company in the GCC as well. And now he has started Faki IVF as the group CEO, and they are also the largest player in fertility, male and female infertility, their fertility medical group and leader in the GCC as well. So he's taken businesses from ground zero and onto the podium many times. And here he's here to share some of his secrets and lessons learned on the road to the top. Ziad, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
You know, I think, you know, when you look at it, people always look at people like you and they see the success and they say, oh, it was easy, or he was connected, or he had this, or he had that. They never see, you know, the times when you fall down, the darkness, those moments when you felt like quitting. You know, they just see the good times, you know. And that, I think that's what makes a champion, is it's not how many times you get knocked down, but how many times you get up. And, you know, what was your darkest moment? What's been your biggest failure? When did life really just knock you flat on your back and it took everything inside you to get up off the ground and throw that knockout punch?
Well, I mean, my biggest failure is when things were not working in the family business. I kept on convincing myself, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And it wasn't okay. Got to the point where we couldn't work together. And I just had to walk away. I mean, probably if it wasn't a family business, I would have probably have been more legally protected by contracts and so on. But when you grow into a family business, you don't consider these things. So my advice to you, irrespective of who you work with, get your contract very clearly defined, because a contract is there to use in case of disagreement, not in case of agreement. And after that, for about 3 years, I had to reconsider my position. I sold lots of my assets. And the priority for me was to keep the family, my immediate family, and at what I believe was important for them to sustain. So my kids were in a private school in the UK. To me, that was very important, that their environment should not suffer. I mean, I sold my cars. I sold my properties that were not needed. I sold my motorbikes, and these are my, you know, pride and
when you left the family business.
When the family business, and for about 3 years.
Because you needed money, you mean? Or?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I technically was broke because I just walked away, more or less.
Wow. So after 16 years of building one of the biggest pipe companies in the GCC.
Well, I mean, I was one of the people who built it, so it's not entirely I led a very important role in the early stages when we bought it. But then it's like everything else, if you have the right foundations, it just grows on its own. It's like a tree or whatever it is. It just has a life of its own. So I walked away and I was extremely angry and emotional because I could not understand why this could happen, you know, especially when you're so close to a family or a business and having been associated for a long time. And this is where the disadvantage is, because I could not prove my worth or my skills on a CV. So I had to go for the first time and write a CV and go and look for a job. And I did apply for everything possible. But they either said that you're overqualified or you don't have the relevant experience.
So not only here, now you get, you know, a crushing blow having this family conflict. Financially, it's a very dark moment for you. And then you're pounding the pavement, getting rejection after rejection.
Yep.
And how do you pull through that? Where do you find your inner strength
This is the funny thing, because this is when I thought I need probably psychological help. And then so I studied, I read books, and I found out, well, this is cool. If I can get into the mind business, then I can turn things around. So I studied hypnosis, I studied NLP, I trained with Richard Bandler, I worked with Paul McKenna. I just wanted to see how they do it. And I thought, this is cool. Instead of going and paying money for people to tell me how to get better, if I understand how I can get better, then I can snap out of it and I can use it with all my other skills that I forgot about because I was so angry and emotional that, you know, I've got my engineering degree, I've got my MBA, I'm a whiz kid at finance and strategy, I'm very good at communication. And then when I took stock of all my skills and I said, I'm not bad actually, I'm quite qualified to do other things. And this is where I went back to doing helping small businesses and build them up and invest in small startup companies and so on. Again, got involved back in the business school just to build, sharpen my skills and so on. And the reason I was hired in Arabtech in 2008, I mean, it was the first official CFO position I take, but I was hired as a strategist and a restructuring expert. But that's the only title that could fit closest to what it is. So I was head of public relations. I was head of regulatory relations. I was head of finance, head of audit, head of strategy, head of all the deals that we have done under the guise of CFO.
Well, so, I mean, we started the show talking about, you know, have you ever seen a tree grow to half its size or seen a shark swim half its speed after prey? But the humans are the only ones that routinely will live to a fraction of their potential. And it's the mind that the battle for your career is in your mind. And so you it's almost like it was scripted because you're saying here, I was in a battle for my career and I stopped looking outside. I stopped dealing, you know, looking for some magic opportunity, magic bullet in the market. And I said, first, I have to kill the enemy within. First, I have to fix the way I'm thinking.
Absolutely. I mean, because if you don't, you're going to be stuck in inside your thoughts that will make it darker and more difficult for you to snap out of it. I mean, one of the things I usually do when I'm in that place is actually I do go in and shut everything out, but not to hide, but to find solutions that I'm capable of using later. Now, that's a skill that people, if they can learn, they can face any of their fears. I mean, I remember for my 40th birthday, I decided to jump out of a plane. My family went crazy, my wife went crazy, my children went crazy, and they thought I'm going to die. And I've never screamed so much in my life. But I thought, this is cool. The second time was bloody boring, to be quite honest. I mean, it wasn't even interesting.
The second time was boring? And
absolutely, because
plane?
You know what to expect.
Oh, my God.
You know, and this is the excitement, the thrill of being challenged and going beyond what you believe your capabilities are. Because as you said, I mean, there is a theory that, you know, most of us that only use about 3 or 4% of our mental capabilities. And the beauty about the human mind, it expands and grows all the time, and we take it for granted. So always look at the past, and we always are comfortable with what we know instead of finding out what we don't know. It's just, as we said, looking outside this little window, and you think the whole world is just this, you know, 10 inches by 10 inches or 30 centimeters, whatever it is. Well, there's a whole beautiful world out there, I mean, or underwater or whatever. I mean, I remember for kicks we used to swim in Jeddah when we were engineers, basically, or what were the early days with booze, because there was nothing else to do in Jeddah and Yambo. Used to swim at night and see the bloody sharks. I mean,
that, swim at night with the sharks. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we didn't intend to swim with the sharks, but you see them basically, and basically, I mean, it's so exciting. It just gets your senses awake and find out how much you're missing on life.
Well, you know,
not that I recommend that you do it, basically.
Yeah. You know, but one of the key things I just want for anyone listening here to understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the top performer, someone who's going to reach that top performance or peak performance in their career, they have to invest time in fixing the way they think. Investing time, if it's not every day, once a week, or how often, I don't know. You tell us, but really focusing that mind on you know, positive thinking, visualizing success, all these other elements. You know, is that part of it?
It must be, because I mean that period where it was a very dark period in my life, I learned how to meditate and I learned how to relax and I learned how to enjoy music more and I learned how to eat differently and more healthy, and so on. I mean, in our culture, I mean, praying is meditation anyway. That's your time to give to yourself. So there are different ways of doing it. And I think people should develop that, should give their time for themselves and recharge their energy one way or another and take all these bad thoughts out of the way. It doesn't mean you don't worry about things. I think you should be aware of this because, you know, you don't want to go at night in the middle of New York wearing diamonds and flashing cash, because I guarantee you'll be mugged, for example. But it doesn't mean you don't enjoy New York when you go there. Just that people have to be aware of things and not cross the line of being paranoid that, you know, what if I fail? Well, so what? I mean, the thing that they should say to themselves, if I fail, so what? You know, and people are not ready to go through that pain, but there is no pain because you're already there. I mean, it can't be worse than when you are.
I always like to think of it as, you know, your body. It's like, you know, you're like a vehicle that's going through the road of life. And just like a car, you're always curious, you know, what's the top speed? What's the performance of this vehicle? And I can see your face lighting up, so I know you've done this before. But in life, don't you want to know what are you capable of? Only those people who go too far will know how far they can go. And it seems like this is the mantra of your life, swimming with sharks and jumping out of planes and taking on restructuring and buying bankrupt companies.
I mean, this is what gives me the kicks, basically, because I believe there's a lot of value in everything that you look at. Even when people were throwing junk out, you know, and they started recycling, people are becoming billionaires because out of recycling one way or another. And I think people, if they have this open mind and believe there's always something good in anything that happens, even if it's a learning experience of an accident, you know, look at the experience that you have learned to increase your knowledge and the way you can do things better. I'm going to the point that we started by talking probably before the program. I mean, we reward successes based on what we know, and we attack failure because we think this is not what we expect something to happen. And this is, unfortunately, something that is inherent in our education system because, you know, we have professors who only go through history and tell you what they believe is right and judge your knowledge based on what they know. Whereas if you have people like, you know, Bill Gates who dropped out or somebody else like that because they believed passionately in what they did and went outside the system and they succeeded.
So more from Ziad Makazumi in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are listening to the story of Ziad Makazumi. And for those of you who are just joining us, you're really going to want to go to our website and listen to the podcast. That's DubaiEye1038.com, because this you know, is a man who started really humble beginnings, working construction in Saudi Arabia, went back, got his MBA, got a job at Booz Allen, learned strategy, learned finance, learned engineering, bought a bankrupt company and turned it into one of the leading pipe companies in the GCC. And then after that, took on the restructuring of Arab Tech, which was the largest publicly listed construction company in the GCC at the time. And now he has taken on another GCC leadership role with his position as group CEO of Faki IVF, one of the leaders in fertility here in the GCC, and with a triple digit growth rate. And he is talking about, you know, some of his biggest failures, about how when him and his brother were working together in Future Pipe and had a falling out and he was broke and didn't have a job, you know, how tough could it be as he pounded the pavement, and how, and what was his approach to that? So you can get all those answers online, you know, what his philosophies were to building up a business, to building up a career. All those answers are there. And now as we head into the final leg of this, Ziad, welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure, and I think we were just talking about the power of your mind, and how important that is. And then the other thing we were looking at is, you know, what's success and what's reality, and where does failure play into that? And you were just saying that you have to be careful when you go to an MBA, because your professors are basing things on their reality, but the world's changed, and so someone with a trailblazing idea, someone who's really out of the box, will be a dropout, like Einstein, like Steve Jobs, like so many of them. And I could just list them after one after the other, you know, Richard Branson or so many of these guys. So how do you deal with that? On one hand, if you're really good, the world will almost destroy you.
Well, I mean, you have to do what you believe. I mean, I believe if you're passionate about something and you're disciplined and you're ready to learn, then anything you have in mind, you will succeed. I mean, I'll just give you an example. When I remember 2008, when they started this concept of falafel sandwiches, just falafel, and now it's one of the big chains that big success stories, because there was a very simple idea that was packaged properly and taken from being everybody's probably diet to something that is exquisite. The same concept as, let's say, prêt-à-manger in England, where you take a simple sandwich and make something out of it. I think if you're passionate about something and you can see how you can add things. I mean, my engineering background taught me one thing. I don't need to reinvent anything. Just take what it works and put it together. So even if you look at Apple, I mean, Apple is not a manufacturer. It's an integrator. They design things and they outsource everything and they get it to work, and they have very good lawyers to protect them. This is why, you know, there are billions of dollar suits between them and Samsung. But if you take Samsung, for example, a lot of people don't know that it's actually a family business. But even a family business that decided we have not enough knowledge to take it forward, or BMW or any of the big chains or companies that are successful, even those that are very successful have admitted that there's a knowledge they need to do, and they're open-minded about things. And it's exactly with the mind. You know, you're like a big corporation and you think you know everything, and you stick to what you know instead of going out and getting that knowledge. And if you stick to that attitude that, but I can't do this, well, then you probably would not be able to do this. But if you believe you can do it, but logically find out how it should be done by learning from others who have done it successfully. I mean, Richard Branson, you talk about Richard Branson. Richard Branson, I understand, had an issue with dyslexia. This is why he was not very good in school, and everybody thought he was a failure, although he was, that turned his intellect to a higher level, because he had to try harder and compensate for what is perceived to be a weakness, whereas it's just a blessing in disguise. It forced him to do something else that no one else has done, basically.
One of the other big themes when I look at, you know, your success story here is that there was never this huge vision or huge strategy. What was really the, and this is my interpretation, was a drive to get the capability set that you want to be able to do X, or you want to do be able to do Y. To be a good business leader, I need finance. To be a good business leader, I need strategy. To be a good business leader, I need to understand process. So you acquired these skill sets, and when, you know, you look at the people who are on the other side of the coin, the underperformers, they're not concerned at all about skill sets. experts. They go to get their chartered accountancy just to get the chartered accountancy, the, you know, stamp that I'm a CA.
Absolutely.
They don't give a, you know what,
absolutely,
about the skill set.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I did my MBA, and even my family and friends said, what the hell is that? Why the hell do you want to do an MBA? Why not do a PhD and be called a doctor? And I said, of course, jokingly, I said, because in Lebanon, I don't want the neighbors to wake me up in the middle of the night and say, doctor, my daughter is not feeling well, and miss the point that I'm an electronics engineer or whatever it is. And even in my year when I did the MBA, there were actually three kinds of groups of students who were doing an MBA. You have one group who really wanted to do something completely different with their lives, and they wanted to learn new skills to be able to achieve that, and they did have a vision and they did have a dream one way or another. And you have a group who thought if they get an MBA paid for by the company, they'll get a higher salary and better parking space. And you had the third group who had no clue what they want to do with their life, so they thought it's a nice way of spending 2 years on daddy's money. And these are the ones that are complete failures and probably never made it in anything. The rest are probably still in their boring, rotten jobs and probably making more money, probably a higher pension, but suffer from ulcers and heart problems and so on. And the third group are the ones who made it. And really, these are the guys who are leaders, and these are the people who are changing the way we think and how we change, we do business one way or another.
What's your advice to somebody who wants to take the next rung in their career or take that next step forward towards the summit of the mountain?
Well, I mean they need to assess themselves what they're capable of. And if there are any resources that are missing, they should develop those, but not spend the time preparing. There has to be a stage where you have to go and attack and take the leap and jump. And that jump, I mean, if you are on the top of a mountain and you really jump without a parachute, I guarantee you're going to break your neck. So plan it, prepare it, and do the first jump probably not from the top of the mountain, but take it forward slowly, but be capable. Because the fact that you had to walk all the way from the bottom to the top of the mountain, a lot of people forget that takes a lot of fitness and planning and attitude. By the time you get there, you are fit to jump again. But the question is, going there is a very, very long way. Coming down is very quick. So you think it's easy. And you should not take anything for granted that it is easy. You should plan for it. And you should test yourself. And you should prepare yourself. But at some stage, you have to jump. Because if you don't, it's a waste of time. And you become a coach and not an athlete.
I mean, your advice, it reminds me, we had Arthur Berman, who's one of the internet sensations. His video has like 11 million hits or something. He lost 180 pounds in 10 months. But, you know, when he said that, you know, it's the formula to achieve anything. Start, don't quit. End of story, right? And most people, that's when you either did one of those two things if you didn't make it, 99% of the time. You don't have the courage to start, which is what you're talking about. Or at some point you quit.
Yeah, but I mean, changing course is not quitting either. It's just if something is not working, if you keep on doing it over and over and over again, it doesn't mean it'll work. I remember I was given the example in my days when computers were only one color, either gray or green. And unfortunately, the most popular ones were Wang computers, basically. They died after a while because the sun took over and messed up the strategy. I remember the operating system, if you don't put the right instructions, it had two kinds of instructions, abort or retry. And they keep on retrying, putting exactly the same instructions, and they wonder why the computer is not working. Your mind is exactly the same. It's a computer that needs reprogramming all the time and giving it new experiences and learning skills that you'd only find by trying and opening your mind and not sitting at home and say, you know, it's okay, I can learn it on the internet. There's a big difference between going out and talking to people and selling them something and reacting to their views and interacting and handling their anger or their upset or whatever it is, because that teaches you something that other people don't have, which is how the mind works. And if you understand how people's mind works and you understand how your mind works, I guarantee you can influence many outcomes most of the time.
Well, I think the audience has been writing in that it's a great program, and I think one person said you're like Harvey Specter from Suits. So I haven't really watched Suits, so I assume that's a compliment.
I'm not sure.
Well,
my wife dies, actually.
We'll have to check in with her. Some people are saying it's amazing how we spoke for an hour and didn't mention Arab Tech, but the show is about personal development, so that's why that is. Ziad, I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights, and I mean, there was obviously a genuine feeling to help some people out there who maybe can use this advice to move themselves forward in life, and I thank you for having the courage to talk about those times when you fell down on your knees, as well as your successes. It was really a pleasure. I think I could have easily done this for 4 or 5 hours with you, but thanks again. Hopefully we can have you on soon again.
I hope so. Thank you.